Welcome to this IFRS Foundation podcast, which will focus on the January meeting of the International Accounting Standards Board. The meeting took place in London on the 24th and 25th of January 2018. My name is Matt Tilling and I'm the Director of Education here at the Foundation. As usual, I'm joined by the Chair of the Board, Hans Hugewurst, and Vice Chair, Sue Lloyd. Hans, let's get straight into the meeting, and we effectively picked up where we left off last year with primary financial statements. This month you didn't discuss any new topics, but continued discussions on two topics from previous meetings. The first issue was around non-GAAP measures.
Yes, I think we achieved some real progress there. What we aim to do is to try to introduce some of the non-GAAP measures that companies use to indicate their performance, which they now produce somewhere in the annual report, but not in the financial statements, to bring that in the financial statements. And that has two advantages. First of all, these numbers then would be subject to external audit, so that will give some more discipline. And we could also impose presentation and disclosure requirements to improve transparency, such as, for example, a mandatory reconciliation to measures that are defined or specified by IFRS standards. We have tentatively decided that if a management performance measure does not fit as a subtotal in the income statement, that then it should be placed in the notes and that it should be accompanied by reconciliation in the notes. And we believe that that would give more transparency to investors. We have also looked at the separate presentation of equity accounted investments, such as the investments in associates and joint ventures. And we have decided that we want to make a split between the presentation of those investments that the company sees as integral to its business and investments that are not considered to be integral to its business. And we will require a separate presentation which leads to new subtotals.
So, Hans, related to the reconciliation in the notes, there was also a proposal to require a five-year history of the reconciliation between the management performance measure and the most appropriate measure defined or specified by IFRS standards.
Yeah, that was the proposal as made by the staff. We considered it, but the board decided not to support this proposal. Many board members thought it would be excessive and impracticable for companies to prepare such lengthy disclosures and that might discourage them from using these performance indicators, and then we would be back where we started. So decided not to do so.
There was a second issue that was discussed around constraints on management performance measures and whether there should be any prohibitions or constraints.
Yes, we thought about that. You could imagine, for example, that you would forbid companies to make a distinction between frequently occurring items and infrequently occurring items. We decided that is not useful. Some board members were of the view that imposing constraints could mean that a management performance measure would not represent management's true view of performance, and that it might encourage entities to continue to present performance measures outside financial statements or way out, not even in the annual report. And that would, again, defeat the purpose of our proposal.
Sue, moving briefly to more technical matters, I was looking back and it was in fact in March where you explained the gamma method to us. I'm not going to ask you to explain the gamma method in detail again, but it did come up in discussions at the board this month.
That's right, and I'm sure everyone remembers the gamma approach, which is the approach to classifying financial instruments from the issuer's perspective, and it's the approach that we're planning to put out for comment later this year. We call this our FICE project, which stands for Financial Instruments with Characteristics of Equity. So at this month's meeting, we talked about a couple of issues that have come up while we've been working on the draft of the discussion paper. So we had, frankly, a pretty geeky discussion about some non-derivative financial instruments that have complex payoffs. So basically, we were talking about instruments that may be settled in the issuer's own shares in some cases. So one category we talked about is instruments where the settlement may be, say, in cash in some circumstances, but where the issuer ultimately has the choice to choose to settle in a fixed number of their own shares. And these would be equity classified under Gamma. And the board agreed that we should include a discussion in the discussion paper about whether we need to bifurcate derivatives from some of these instruments, whether we need to think about sometimes making them liability classified, for example, if it was pretty unlikely that shares would in fact ever be delivered, or whether we should look at putting value changes somewhere being reflected in attribution in a statement of changes in equity to provide additional information in the financial statements. And then we talked about instruments where, again, there are different settlement outcomes, but where there is an obligation for the issuer to deliver a variable number of its own shares, and that amount is independent of the net assets of the issuer. And the board agreed that in these cases, the instrument should have a debt host. And maybe it's easier to explain that with an example because it's very abstract. So let's say I've got an instrument where if the issuer's share price is between £5 and £20, the holder's going to always get £100 worth of the issuer's shares. But if the share price is below £5 or above £20, the number of shares they'll get will be fixed. So basically, if the share price is low, the holder will get less than £100 of shares. If the share price is high, they'll get more than £100 worth of shares, but in between, they'll always get £100. In that case, the board agreed the instrument should have a debt host. So that gives you a good snapshot of a geeky discussion.
Thanks for that. Hans, there was a brief update to the board on the status of the conceptual framework.
Yes, the staff told us, and I'm very pleased to announce that the project is now very close to its end. The staff issued a ballot draft to the board in December 2017, and they are now working through the comments that they received from the board members. That is a rather painstaking labor, so it takes some time, but now they're very close to the end, and we expect to issue the revised conceptual framework in March of 2018, 2 months from now. We can then start using it immediately.
And I'm looking forward to discussing the conceptual framework in a little bit more detail once it's published. Sue, two issues came up from the Interpretations Committee and were brought to the board.
That's right. So based on feedback from the Interpretations Committee, the board was asked to consider whether commodity loans and related transactions should form part of a new research project. And interestingly, the paper that the staff prepared for us proposed looking at a project which covered not only commodities, but also things like digital currencies and emissions allowances, so looking at investments more broadly. They were really just seeing if there was extra information that we needed, and they're going to bring that issue back to us along with other pipeline research projects for a discussion more generally about the timing of some of these new research projects, and we'll discuss that at a future meeting. The other issue that came to the board that also started with the Interpretations Committee was to do with taxation on fair value measurements, and the board agreed to propose a really small amendment to our agriculture standard, IAS 41, to enable entities to measure the fair value of their biological assets on a pre-tax basis. It's almost a tidy up, and we agreed that would go through our annual improvements cycle.
The board was presented with feedback from phase two of the post-implementation review of IFRS 13, fair value measurement. This feedback included comment letters and external academic literature review and other research that was undertaken by ISB staff. Hans, can you talk us through where we're up to with that project?
Yes, so a couple of years back, the board has decided that of all the newer standards will be followed up by a post-implementation review to see whether the standard has worked as we thought it would work, or that there were that we have seen unexpected problems or ways to improve the standard. So we are in the process of doing this post-implementation review of IFRS 13, fair value measurement, a standard that was issued after the financial crisis, because it was clear that our guidance around fair value measurement was not as clear as people would like it to be. The feedback that we have received from most of our constituents is actually very positive, that they feel that the standard has been a good addition to our standards, that it has improved the quality of the disclosures and fair value measurement. So all in all, I think we have reasons to be satisfied with this standard. But as always, there are certain issues that where opinions can differ, or where people think that there could be improvements. Issues that we will be looking at and that we've got free feedback on was about, for example, the disclosures about fair value measurement, especially the disclosure sensitivity analyses around level 3 fair value measurements. And we got very divided opinions between investors on the one hand and preparers on the other hand. The investors thought that this information was very valuable. Preparers complained about these disclosures being very costly to prepare, and they also felt that they were not always all that useful, which is contested by the investors. So we need to do a little bit more digging there. Perhaps we will have to issue educational material in the future to help preparers feeling more comfortable with these disclosures. Well, this is just one of the issues that we will be looking at. There are other issues, but we will come back to those in the future.
Finally, Sue, the board continues to discuss goodwill.
We do. And we've been discussing whether there are ways to simplify the calculation of value and use for impairment testing without making the impairment tests that we have in IAS 36 less robust. And at the meeting this week, the board agreed that the due process document that we publish on goodwill and impairment should explore allowing entities to include the effect of potential restructurings and enhancements in the cash flows that they use to calculate value and use. And we also agreed to propose removing the explicit requirement we have today to use pre-tax inputs in calculating value and use, and the requirement to disclose the pre-tax discount rates used. And it's probably just worth noting that we still have to make a formal decision on whether the next stage for us is going to be publishing a discussion paper or an exposure draft. So that decision is still to come.
Finally, Hans, is there anything interesting happening in the coming weeks?
Well, this weekend we will be traveling to Hong Kong, where we have one of our three yearly meeting with our trustees. We're going to be discussing a lot of issues there. And also, as usual, we will use this opportunity for outreach. Sue and I will meet with a lot of insurance companies in Hong Kong. Hong Kong has recently decided to endorse IFRS 17, so that's very important. And insurance companies there are very keen to hear from us and get some more insight in the standard. We will also talk to the regulatory community, the chairman of IOSCO, regulator in Hong Kong, so we will meet with him as well. So it will be a very good opportunity to meet with a lot of important people, and we look forward to it.
Well, that brings us to the end of the January podcast. Thank you, Hans and Sue, and thank you to our listeners. Any feedback on these podcasts, please email communications@ifrs.org. The full summary of the board's discussion and the decisions at the January meeting can be found in the ISB update on the IFRS Foundation's website.